Well, everybody complains about the weather, but nobody does anything about it. And just like all of you, I look around at the world, America especially, and say, what is going on here? What's going on? The world is upside down. It's absolutely bat guano crazy. And everybody knows it. And why isn't anybody doing anything about it? Why is this going on and accelerating and getting worse? Well, it turns out that there's a really good reason for this. And I've known what the reason was for a long time, talked about it before. I'm going to talk about it again, too. But digging a little bit deeper into this phenomenon, I found what you might call a loophole. So let's get started with this. The most powerful psychological factor in human behavior is social proof, is doing what other people do. So we're going to start our little experiment today with something a little more lighthearted. Now, back in the day of black and white TV and then later color, there was a show that was extremely popular called Candid Camera. And Candid Camera was really pretty simple. They would set up a hidden camera, and then the Candid Camera crew would have actors go in and interact with people and get them to do weird things and so on. And then at the end of every one of these segments, when the people are utterly mystified, the people who were working for the show would turn and smile, and they'd say, smile, you're on Candid Camera. And they'd go, walk, 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 walk. It was a good-hearted show, never really mean. And so in order to understand what's going on with our world and why nothing's happening to stop it, let's take a quick look at one of these early segments from Alan Funt's Candid Camera.
The gentleman in the elevator now is a candid star. These folks who are entering, the man with the white shirt, the lady with the trench coat, and subsequently one other member of our staff, will face the rear. And you'll see how this man in the trench coat tries to maintain his individuality, but little by little, he looks at his watch, but he's really making an excuse for turning just a little bit more to the wall. This man has apparently been in groups before. Here's a fella with his hat on in the elevator. First, he makes a full turn to the rear, and Charlie closes the door. A moment later, we'll open a door. Everybody's changed positions. Notice, they take off their hats. And now, do you think we could reverse the procedure? Watch.
So, is that all it takes? Four people, maybe five people, doing something completely weird and unheard of, essentially. Is that what it takes? Three or four people in a closed space for you to do it too? You say you wouldn't do that, but most of the people who went into that elevator, if you'd asked them before they went in, if they were susceptible to group pressure, I'm sure most of them would have said no, but nevertheless, you saw the results. Now, that was the funny side of it, but let's look at the serious side of it. In the 70s, a psychologist named Ash did something called the Ash Conformity Experiment. And I've talked about this before, so I'm going to do a brief cutdown of this from the actual experiment to give you an idea of how the Ash Conformity Experiment works, but I'm going to save the loophole for later.
The experiment you'll be taking part in today involves the perception of lengths of lines. As you can see here, I have a number of cards, and on each card there are several lines. Your task is a very simple one. You're to look at the line on the left and determine which of the three lines on the right is equal to it in length. All right, we'll proceed in this order. You'll give your answer.
Only one of the people in the group is a real subject, the fifth person with the white t-shirt. The others are confederates of the experimenter and have been told to give wrong answers on some of the trials. The experiment begins uneventfully as subjects give their judgments.
Two. Three.
Three.
But on the third trial, something happens.
Two.
The subject denies the evidence of his own eyes and yields to group influence. Ash found subjects went along with the group on 37% of the critical trials. But he found, through interviews, that they went along with the group for different reasons.
One.
They must be right. There are four of them and one of me.
One.
This subject's yielding is based on a distortion of his judgment. He genuinely believes that the group is correct.
Social proof. I've talked about this an awful lot. This is why the Emperor's New Clothes story is such a profoundly good story and why it's so important for us to understand this, especially in this day and age. A kingdom is ruled by an emperor, and he's not a bad guy, but he's very vain and he's very full of himself, likes to look in the mirror a lot, and he's not very smart. And so a couple of con artists decided that maybe they could take this guy for some money. So they come into the court posed as tailors, and they say, "Your Majesty, a man of your virtue and so on, we have a material, a cloth that we think you'll be very interested in. And before we show it to you, the thing about this cloth is it's actually fairly magical. Its colors and its beauty can only be seen by those who are very virtuous and very wise and very smart, but common people can't see it at all, which is why I think you'd enjoy it so much for your court." So they open up this chest and they pull out nothing. And they drape it over their arms and they caress it. And they say, "Your Majesty, you can clearly see, especially in this light, how the gold just comes off of this, and the turquoise blue and the wonderful combination of colors." And then the other guy says, "It's absolutely magnificent and it's very, very expensive to produce." Now, the emperor doesn't see anything, and he doesn't see anything because there's nothing there. But he's already been told that only stupid people can't see it. And so he says, just like the guys in the elevator, just like the guys in the test, "Yes, it's incredible. It's unbelievable. Wonderful. Oh, my God. My goodness. You have to make me a suit out of this stuff. Here's a ton of money." So the guys come back, have to delay because the work is so delicate and so on. All of these cues to indicate that they're working real hard on this. And finally, they appear with this nothing on a clothes hanger. And by this point, everybody in the court has heard the story. Everybody in the whole town has heard the story. And so when they unveil this great big nothing, everybody oohs and ahs. Now, here's the important point. Nobody sees the clothes because the clothes aren't there. But everybody assumes that they're the only one that don't see the clothes. So they send out signals indicating that they do, and everybody else gets those signals, and they realize they must be the only person who doesn't see the cloth. So as you probably know, if you know the story, the emperor goes on a parade through the town, and everybody's oohing and aahing. Nobody sees it, but everybody is giving everyone else the signals that they do. Until finally, at the very end of a parade, a little boy who's not aware of things like reputation and all the rest of it, gossip, says he's not wearing any clothes. And instantly, gone. The whole illusion is gone. Okay? That's the power of social proof. Now, what's happening in our society today is that these loudspeakers of social media, mainstream media, politics, all of it, are blaring stories at us. And they're blaring them at us so consistently and so loudly. And they're giving us so much social proof. Well, the doctors and the scientists and all that, 997 out of 10,000 scientists agree that global warming is a blah, blah, blah. Here comes all the proof. And they're bombarding us with what we know to be insane. And they're doing it so often and so effectively that we begin to think, well, we must be nuts or we just want to get along, or we don't want to be kicked out of the group or banished from the kingdom or called a racist or whatever it is. We don't want to be cut out of the social circle, and so we go along. It is the most important, most powerful motivator of psychology. It is more important than your most dearly held beliefs. If you actually tested people and you gave them a chance to speak up for their most deeply held beliefs in a room full of people who disagreed with them, most people, not all of them, most people would go along. That's why people turn to face the back in the elevator. That's why people agree with what the guy sitting next to them says rather than believing their own lying eyes. But. Here's the one part about the Ash experiment that I had not known about. And it's very simple and it's very important.
Two.
In the previous experiment, the naive subject stood alone against the group. In this variation, Ash gave the naive subject a partner. here seated in the third position, who also gives the correct response.
One.
One. Two.
One.
Two.
With a partner, yielding drops to only 5% of the critical trials compared to 37% without a partner. Although subjects report warmth and good feeling toward the partner, they typically deny that he played a role in their own independence. Two. The partnership variation shows that much of the power of the group came not merely from its numbers, but from the unanimity of its opposition. When that unanimity is punctured, the group's power is greatly reduced.
Now, isn't that interesting? One guy agreeing with what the test subject saw, despite the fact that he was outvoted, in fact, both of them were outvoted, just having one other person share the opinion of the test subject, as you could hear from the clip, enormously reduced the people's willingness to go along with the rest of the group. In other words, all of the social proof was telling him to lie, but in the middle of all that social proof was another piece of social proof, and that piece of social proof was, well, at least this guy sees the same thing I do, and that essentially unlocked that conformity response, because that's what it's called. It's called the Ash conformity experiment. One guy speaking the truth unlocked everybody, not just these test subjects. If you think you're immune to this, you're wrong. I know that because I'm not immune to it. I can't tell you how many times I would hear somebody like Rush Limbaugh say something, and I say, I can't believe he said that. And then just, what do you mean you can't believe he said that? That's what you believe. Yeah, but he came out and said it out loud. Yes, he did. That's why he was so powerful. Take a look at the expression again that's shared between these two people. Ashes to ashes, folks, that's what we are. We're ash conformity test subjects, and we're all going along to some degree. We're complaining about it in public. We're complaining about it in the company of ourselves. We're complaining about it in the company of people who we know will agree with us, like those of us here. But when it comes time to actually take a stand, when the pressure's on, when you're actually in the elevator, almost none of us are doing that. And so all of this just to say one thing. Folks, be this guy. Be this guy. If you are the Confederate, if you're the one voice in the entire crowd that's saying, no, I'm not going to call you Xi or Fatwa or whatever adjective or pronoun you've come up with, I'm not going along with it. I'm happy to respect your space and so on, but I'm not going to change my language for you. I'm not going to go along with it. No. Be that guy. There's an even better example. If you really want to stand up to tyranny, be this guy.